Super Talk Mississippi Media Production. You're listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi, covering Mississippi State sports like nobody else. With Sports Talk Mississippi's Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk of On3 Sports. Now get ready for Thunder and Lightning.
This is Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi. Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk here with you on a Friday morning. Thanks for joining us here at supertalk.fm or wherever it is that you get podcasts from. We appreciate you guys out there, our great listeners, especially our servicemen and women out there taking care of us. I want to thank our sponsors over at Strange Brew Coffeehouse and Churn and Spoon Ice Cream. Start your day the right way with a trip to the drive-thru over at Strange Brew Coffeehouse here in Starkville or at Brupolo over in Tupelo. Be a little weird, Robbie, if Brupolo was in Latimer.
Would be a little weird.
A place at the table.
I was just about to make a program.
Starting defense.
Would you let him spit coffee in your mouth?
I would not let anybody spit in my mouth. No, absolutely not. That's a bit much. But
even if it was some blueberry cobbler.
I don't want hot spit in my mouth for sure. That's the worst. Room temperature, body temperature spits bad enough. Now I got scalding hot saliva going into my mouth. No, thank you.
Well, at least it'll be, you know,
blueberry
for the most part, probably germ free.
Yeah, okay. I'm just gonna say no to it. No, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm also not gonna go lie down in the middle of the road and read a magazine either. So.
Or slam your head through a car windshield.
I'm not going to do a lot of the things that Latimer did. Latimer, not a great guy.
Steroids.
Tried to rape a girl.
Yes.
Lied to his coach. Lied to his teammates. Not a great
guy.
Beat
Mississippi State, too.
He did get a sack. He sacked Locke a couple of times, so. Never liked Locke back there at center. Well, you know, we weren't very good. Was Locke the quarterback or the tailback? I have to go back and look. So it was Locke and Tyler were the two guys you knew from Mississippi State in that game.
What did you think of those uniforms?
Well, that's the old school, like puffy MSJ. Like,
It was the MSJ. And the uniforms had that silver in them too, did they not?
I think so. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. So there you go. Wherever you are in our great state, you can enjoy Strange. We could do a whole show on the program. Just want to point that out.
Yes.
You can enjoy Strange Brew Coffee each and every morning. It's just a click away at strangebrewcoffeehouse.com. Pip Printing and Signs, reliable service for every business need. I've been saying this for the past couple of days. You need to go to their website, pipridgeland.com, to get a real idea of everything that is offered at Pip Printing and Signs, everything they can do for you and for your business. They've got a way to get the message you want out there. And it's not just about, you know, flyers in the mail. I'm talking about this, they can change the way people perceive your business when they walk in the door with great signage, great graphics, everything that Pip Printing and Signs has to offer. So if you're a business owner, you need to give them a call today and find out what exactly they can do for you. Call Cam Baker at 601-499-5216, or you can visit them online at pipridgeland.com to find out more about what they have to offer. When you need printing, call Pip today. Don't forget also, if you're a Bulldog fan, 10% of your sale with Pip Printing and Signs goes towards Bulldog Initiative. College Corner, collegecornerstore.com is the place to find the maroon and white merchandise that you are looking for. And you are looking for it. You are looking to get some new gear, be it State Script, Interlocking, M over S, Walking Bully, whatever it is. They've got it at College Corner. Two locations to serve you in the Jackson area, Ridgeland by Fleet Feet, Flowood by the Half Shell, or you can shop online, collegecornerstore.com. Restaurant Tyler, Starkville's flagship restaurant, the place to grab the best meal in town for lunch, dinner, or Sunday brunch. Robbie and I had lunch at Restaurant Tyler just yesterday, and it was delightful. And I've been thinking about it ever since, I'll be honest with you. I'm just like, I told Robbie when we left, I was like, I was already in a good mood before we got here, but this lunch has put me in a great mood. And that mood carried the rest of the day. I was in a good mood until I went to bed. So that's the kind of serotonin you get from a meal at Restaurant Tyler.
It made me want to go to sleep.
See, I didn't have that option. I would have liked to have gone to sleep, but I couldn't. So I stayed up. I did this podcast, did two shows, went home, cooked a little, did I cook dinner last night? Yeah, I cooked a little dinner, and there you go. And I was in a great mood the whole day.
Yeah, I was too. I left nary a crumb on my plate.
There wasn't anything left on my plate. I even got the leftover mac and cheese with the cornbread. That plate could have been sent right back out to a customer, and nobody would have thought this plate is dirty.
You had the blackened catfish with mac and cheese and cheese grits.
Double carb.
I had the fried chicken.
Fried chicken, yeah.
With, of course, the crawfish sauce on top. Mm-hmm. Plus, I had mashed potatoes, which were excellent, and black-eyed peas. It was a very Southern meal.
Yeah.
And they do Southern meals very well there.
They sure do. There you go. So, if you want the best meal in town, you need to go to Restaurant Tyler. Priority One Bank, 16 locations to serve you throughout Central Mississippi. Let PriorityOneBank.com be your guide. Let them show you everything that they can do with your money. You did the hard work to get the money to the bank. Let them take it from there and show you how to invest, how to manage your money. Hey, if you're already a Priority One Bank customer, you know that their app is not your normal banking app. It's not just about, moving money from one account to the other. Anything you can do at a Priority One Bank branch, you can do on that app. It's a great, smooth, streamlined app. Check it out if you're a Priority One Bank customer. You should already have it on your mobile device. Let Priority One Bank make you their priority. We've got a great show lined up today. Later in the show, we're going to talk to Mike Golic Jr., college football analyst, host of the Gojo and Golic podcast. He gets to work with his dad, sort of like Robbie, who gets to work with me.
Yes.
I'm not Robbie's dad, but I am an old cranky man.
Sometimes you remind me of my dad.
Your dad and I have some similarities, but we also have a lot of differences.
Yes.
So,
you both like to eat.
I would love like to do a podcast with your dad where we just give out dad life advice.
Yeah.
Because we're so different. That. It would be completely different. Like your dad would be telling people to take, turn the other cheek and take, be patient and things like that. I'd be like, this sucks. We got to get some action here. We got to do something.
Yeah, my dad doesn't mind, there's times where he'll put his foot down.
Yeah, I'm sure that foot was in your ears a couple times too.
A few times, yep.
But, so we got that later in the show. But let's talk some football to start. We do have to get a little baseball. We're not going to leave the podcast with baseball. Who would do that? But we are going to talk some baseball a little later in the show. But Robbie, today is Friday. First scrimmage of preseason camp is on Sunday. If we can fast forward ahead to Sunday, we're sitting there in the SEAL building ready to talk to Jeff Lebby after that scrimmage. What's something that, the first question is going to be like, so what'd you think? Something like that. What do you want to hear him say?
Well, I told you before the show, I wanted to say that the offense was excellent and the defense was excellent. Somehow they were both great. That would be awesome if he could do that. But
I don't think that's going to happen.
That's entirely possible.
Yeah. And of course, he was adamant on Wednesday that the defense had dominated the scrimmage. He came out and just, I think he was a little disappointed, being an offensive guy to have to tell us that. But he was really upfront about the fact that defensively they had dominated the day on Wednesday.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to hear that the defense is making more strides. I thought that the good thing about Lebby in the past couple of weeks is we've actually gotten some things from him where he's like talking about things I need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells me that he's willing to tell it like it is at times. You're not going to have a guy that's just going to be coach speak the entire time.
Right.
I like that about him. I like the fact that I can see some transparency there. And I'm not sitting here going, he could very well be spewing bull crap right now.
Right.
So in some ways, I want to hear some things that they need to work on. I want to hear about, we're not doing this stuff well. I need to see more out of these guys in this particular area. I wouldn't mind hearing some of that. I don't want to hear that being his entire spiel, because then you might have some problems with his team this year. But I would like to hear some more on – some players that are stepping up, some players that have really stood out to him, just to get an idea of, kind of where Mississippi State is right now and some of the guys that are kind of moving to the top of the ladder and players that we need to be watching out for early on. So I would like to hear something on both sides of the ball, and also with some details on, like, with the other day we were told that, you know, Kelly Jones had a pick six,
yeah,
in the practice, and it was really kind of a guy emerging at defensive back. So I want to hear a little bit more on some of the players that are standing out and the guys to watch this year.
What about Blake Shapen's specific stuff? What do you want? What was something he could tell you? Like, I thought Shapen did this today.
Just that he's continuing to kind of take hold from a leadership standpoint and grasping the offense. He has a clear idea of what he's expected to do at quarterback in Jeff Lebby's offense. I don't want to hear that, you know, yeah, he's coming along. At this stage, you want to know that Blake Shapen has control of the offense, has control of that quarterback room. I want to hear that, you know, he's the unquestioned leader of the offense. I need the quarterback to be the leader of the offense and quite possibly the leader of the entire team. So it'd be nice to know that, you know, he's in a state where he's kind of locked in on what he's been asked to do by Lebby and Matt Holachek and those guys.
Defensively, I agree with what you're saying about individual players, you know, because that's where I fear, like, because it helps me in my process. Just to give everybody a heads up, next week we'll do our yearly All-22 rankings. And even today, I'm not entirely locked into who the All-22 are going to be, who are going to be those starters on that side of the ball. And even really on the offensive side of the ball, there's still some questions. So I'm in complete agreement with you that I want to hear some individual names. You know, normally when we go to these press conferences, and I understand guys have to write their features and everything, but, like, I'm not interested in individual player stuff. I don't know why. I'm always more interested in big picture stuff. You know, I want to hear, you know, about the team as a whole, what's going on there. That's just me. But Sunday, I want to hear names. I want to talk about is, if we can get 22 questions, tell me what this guy did. Tell me what that guy did.
So, like, Coach, if you could rank your top 22 players and their importance,
if Devon Booth has had, let's just say, 11 carries today, does that sound about 11 carries, give or take? But how many yards would he have rushed for on that? Something like that, you know.
Who would you say was getting the most reps at running back today?
How many catches did Kelly Akari have?
Hypothetically.
Yeah, I'm not asking for the real, just for me. Like that. I think another thing to find out is, you know, it's obviously a controlled scrimmage and they'll only be able to do so much, but how does the offensive line look in this one? Because that's the unit that's going to determine what this offense is, right? It's Shapen can be as good as anybody. Akari and Coleman can get open down the field. Booth can be great with the ball in his hands. They can't block, it doesn't matter. And so, you know, finding out who that first five is and how they're working together, Robbie, I feel like that's a big piece of everything that we need to find out this Sunday.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it looks like it's pretty much set at this point. Mm-hmm. I would think. I mean, there might be a position or two that's not, but I think that's gotten close to a crow is now getting closer and closer to my door on my back porch. It's kind of
It's not
eerie.
The crow, is it? Not, it's not a.
I don't think so. Not a, oh, good. My cat's chased it off. Good.
Come back from the dead.
Brandon Lee.
Yeah, well, he would really be coming back from the dead. You know they're remaking them.
They are. I don't know if I'm not interested in that.
It doesn't look great. It's the guy from It.
Which one?
The guy who played It.
The guy who played Pennywise?
Yeah.
The
Danish.
Skarsgård.
Skarsgård, yeah. Yeah.
He's in a family full of actors.
Yeah, yeah. But I saw the commercials for it, and I was like, eh.
I don't know. He plays an eerie guy. He was also in another... He was in a series that was kind of another Stephen King thing, I think. But anyway, sorry, the crow caught my attention there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the offensive line appears to be, at this point, pretty settled. I think Albert Reese definitely looks to have a spot, probably at guard. Ethan Miner, Obviously, it looks like he's going to be the center, left tackle, Pounders. You know, I haven't heard a ton on Jacoby Jackson, but I imagine he's probably going to be your guard, and then Leon Bell. I mean, it looks like that group's probably settled, but there are some options there too.
Yeah, I think we're going – if I was doing it today, Pounders, Reese, Minor, Jackson, Bell, I think that's your five across right now.
Yeah, or flip the guards. I don't know if that matters.
Yeah, I don't know if it matters or not. So Reese, that's a tall guard.
He's versatile enough. He can do it.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not worried about him. I'm worried about shaping, seeing over his tall self. You know, like trying to look down the field here. Albert, could you move?
Well, he's almost on his knees. So I think, surely he can see over him.
The last thing
whenever he gets in the stance.
The last thing I want to hear from this is pretty simple. Didn't miss any kicks today. I would like to be told, special teams, yeah. We challenged them from 45 in and didn't miss a single one. That would make Brian a happy boy.
That used to be in the scrimmages, like one of the things that we always reported on that just made the people the most angriest.
Oh yeah,
when we
talk
about somebody, so and so just missed a
32-yard field goal. You're like, oh yeah, my God. Yeah, yeah. I understand that. I sympathize.
Like, why can they not find a kicker? I think it's finally to the point where they're pretty consistent.
Yeah. So that's right. So Sunday, it's early. Like, you going to skip church? What are you doing?
I don't think I'm going to make it this time. I think Paul will be there. So
Paul's going to skip church? One of y'all is going to have to be a heathen.
Yeah. Okay. Paul's skipping church.
Okay.
I skipped church with Paul a couple of times, you know, when I had to cover the football official visitors. So. Okay. So, he's going to handle – because I handled Wednesday.
Yeah.
He's going to handle Sunday. So.
Obviously.
Yeah.
So we'll get it. We'll talk scrimmage.
I don't know if people heard this on the David – we've talked about this, but when we talked to David Turner, there's a spot – if you go back and watch the YouTube video, you can go to the Maroon and White Daily and you can hear it. It's like – I don't know, maybe like the six-minute mark or something. I don't know, but listen to it.
Yeah.
You can hear somebody just go, yawning.
Yeah.
And you see my camera like shoots the ceiling for a second because I turned around and I stared a hole through Paul. Paul was sitting back there in the seats.
Yeah.
As lounged out as possible. And it was him yawning.
Just ripped off a monster yawn.
And then you can hear his like Tic Tacs that he's getting out of his pocket.
Yeah.
Or Altoids or whatever it was.
It was funny.
They can get his hard candy.
It was funny.
I was like, Paul, did you realize how loud that yawn was?
Yeah.
That was the loudest yawn, the most obnoxious yawn.
It was loud.
That could have happened in that singular moment.
I finally heard the Stone Blanton stuff about screaming. I thought that was fantastic. Finally heard it.
It was a little odd.
Coach Screamer? Like,
that was a little odd.
Say again? So that'll be Sunday. So Monday's Thunder and Lightning podcast, we'll have a full recap as much as we can from the scrimmage. You know, plus, you know, you never know with me and Robbie, we might talk to somebody who knows something more than we do. So, if we do, we'll throw that. We'll sprinkle that information into Monday's podcast. Before we go to the break here, Robbie, we got to talk a little baseball. Transfer portal seems to finally be winding.
You want to fit this in the smallest window possible.
Now let's talk a little baseball. All right, moving on.
Let's move.
MSU transfer target Avia Arquette is moving to Oregon State.
I feel like there's been more misses than there has been lands.
I want to say this about Arquette, and Bulldog fans may not want to hear this, but if the NIL numbers I heard for what State offered versus what Oregon State offered are accurate, this kid really did not want to come to Mississippi State. He did not want to be here because State made a gargantuan offer compared to what Oregon State offered him. And the kid is at Oregon State. So now that I think we can say at this point it's all said and done, right? It seems unlikely that there's anybody left to bring in. Grade State's portal class for me. What do you think? My first thought is it can't be more than a C because they didn't really get the pitching that I think feel like they needed. Losing out Travis Smith to the draft was tough, but they just kept bringing guys in for visits that they wanted and not sealing the deal with them.
Yeah, I think, you know, C is probably as high as it can go. I mean, we've talked about this, and the pieces that they added, you know, had they gotten a Arquette, and had they gotten the guy from Stetson, like a couple of those pieces, it's an A for the offense and the defense, because you got two impact bats right there. I look at the pieces that they added, and there's really only one guy, that Ace Reese from Houston, that you look at that's a true impact guy. The rest of these guys are kind of role players, and they have their spot too. I mean, they're gonna have a chance to help Mississippi State too. I don't see them being 10, 15 home run guys, 340 average, you know, middle of the lineup type players.
One thing,
and that's what you were missing.
You correct me if I'm wrong. It feels like the guys State got, that they got guys they wanted, but when it came to guys they had to beat out another top team for, they didn't get those guys.
They're struggling to win these battles. I mean, a few of these guys, like, you know, Ace Reese, they had to beat out some players for him.
Right. He's the outlier though.
You know, a couple of them did have some good SEC offers. I think Gary Frey had a couple of good SEC teams after him. Jacob Pruitt, maybe Chase Hungate, but the offense is just—it's not moving the needle for me. I think you're going to be a more well-rounded offense, but there's just not a lot of impact bats in here, and you had to have impact bats. You miss David Mershon's gone, Dakota Jordan's gone, Connor Hyzak's gone. You had to have somebody replacing those guys. And could there be somebody on the current roster do that? It's possible. There's somebody that can make that kind of jump. I think that, you know, obviously Nolan Stevens is a guy that can do that. But banking on the roster that you have coming back being better than the one last year is tough. And especially from a pitching standpoint, you added two pitchers. You just lost three picks of inside the top three rounds. That was your starting rotation, plus the other guys that left, like Tyson Harden and Tyler Davis and Brooks Auger. You've lost a lot. And again, you're banking on what you're bringing back. And that's obviously their prerogative to do that, because they know who's coming back, and we'll see if they're right or not on that. But man, I mean, just on the surface, there's very little to be excited about moving forward. And then you look at the fact that Mississippi State was after these guys that went elsewhere, the guys that went to Arkansas, the guys that went to Florida. They lost a couple of guys. They also got an Ole Miss. They missed out on a lot of top-end talent that would have helped this team, and didn't really replace those guys with equal or better players. Go back to the last couple of years, they've lost some of those players that would make this team better. There's just so many things with this baseball program right now that is just – it's unacceptable. Mississippi State should never be in this position. And it's kind of ad nauseum at this point, Brian. I mean, I don't know what else we can say. It's just – it is what it is at this point. And I don't know if it's ever going to change. I don't know if Mississippi State's ever going to be a player in the transfer portal under this current staff. I just don't know. And I think anybody that accepts the current product, missing out on these players to Oregon State and Auburn and Alabama and places like that, that should never happen at a place like Mississippi State. That should never happen. Oregon State doesn't even have a conference right now, do they?
Yeah. No, they don't. They don't.
And you cannot give away money to these people right now. It's like, you know, they couldn't convince David Mershon to come back. Like, the money that they have is useless at this point to some of these players, because they're not signing on for it. They're taking significantly less to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's an issue. Yeah. Whatever Mississippi State is doing on visits is not working. They're not able to get guys to come to those visits and say, there's no way I can go anywhere else.
Yeah.
And that's what Mississippi State should be. And they didn't leave Andy Canizero uncommitted. When Andy Canizero got them to campus, they were committed when they left.
Yeah.
And at this point, Mississippi State can't get these guys locked down. There's something is wrong that they're doing, and they've got to fix it.
We'll see what happens. I guess we'll see what fall ball brings, and then on to the season for Mississippi State. But I agree, the trend, and it is a trend at this point. It's over the past few seasons of missing out on the obvious top targets is concerning. So last year you were able to push through that and have an acceptable, I guess, season. We'll see what this season brings.
With 11 draft picks.
That's
a school record.
Yeah, I'm not sure if last year's team overachieved or underachieved. I guess when you look at it, they underachieved, but
it's hard to know.
Yeah. Let's move into the final part of the show that's brought to you by our friends over at the Mississippi Beef Council, who want to remind you that beef, it is what's for dinner. If you're doing the cooking this weekend, or if you're not, steak should be on the menu. So if you want to fire up the grill, nothing beats the sizzle of beef. But also at the same time, if you want to go out to dinner and enjoy a great steak at one of our many, many steakhouses here in the state of Mississippi, do that as well. Just know that you're supporting our beef providers, over $500 million a year of agribusiness every year, thanks to beef. Beef, it's what's for dinner, thanks to our friends at the Mississippi Beef Council. Two Brothers Smoked Meats in the heart of the Cotton District is the place to find the smoked Southern soul food that you are looking for. If you are looking for a great meal in Starkville, I'll tell you where to go get one. It's at Two Brothers Smoked Meats. Or you can just go a little further down the street to the Older Brother and enjoy a fancy sandwich. And, of course, we keep talking about them, the best French fries in the city of Starkville. Just so good. They're so good, you'll want to eat them off your friend's plate.
Yes, and Brian does that.
Just one time.
Brian does a Bob Karskadden and puts his grimy fingers on other people's plates.
No. What Bob would do is wait for you to get up and leave, and then he'd eat the French fries. I do it to your face. They're still fresh.
Do you think he's ever reached into a garbage can and got, or is that beyond him?
I cannot say that there is a 0% chance the man has not eaten actual refuse.
Like he sees like a plate that's sitting in the garbage can. It hasn't
turned over. Like the Costanza where the donut was on top of the garbage.
Right.
Bob might have done that.
I could see it.
So.
His reasoning for that was like, I know those people.
Yeah.
It's still weird.
It's not. No.
I still would not eat off of someone's plate after they've left the table.
No. Yeah, you are correct, Robbie. You are correct. Don't eat garbage. Eat fancy sandwiches. I don't know if that's a t-shirt or not, but make it happen. Go enjoy lunch today at the Older Brother.
The irony of that was it was at Restaurant Tyler, wasn't it?
It was. Do you know who the person was?
Who?
It's Ann Strickland.
Oh, that's no. It's
not Strickland's wife. She
no.
They spoke. And then when she left, he went over the table and got something off the table. Hey, like you're a homeless person.
What was it? What did he eat? Oh,
I don't remember. I mean, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. Piece of catfish. I don't know.
Oh, God. That is. I don't know. I don't know if I could stomach that.
Yeah. There you go.
Good Lord.
I'm with you. Great products, great service. Every business likes to promise. I don't know if Bob's ever tried to, you know, get a copy machine out of the garbage. I don't know about that. Probably not. But before you throw a copy machine in the garbage, or if you got to throw your copier in the garbage, get a new one from Advantage Business Systems. Any kind of technology you need for your business, copiers, printers, computers, laptops, mailing and information systems, it's all right there at Advantage Business Systems. But what most importantly is, you don't have to throw it in the garbage when you deal with them because you can give them a call. You don't have to be on hold for an hour. You don't have to wait a week to 10 days for somebody to show up to fix it. Because you're in Mississippi, a lot of times they can fix your problems the exact same day. Your business can't afford to wait. It doesn't have to with Advantage Business Systems. 601-362-9192, or visit them online at absms.com. Find out how Advantage Business Systems will help your business do business. Before you're at the games this fall, you need to be at Maroon & Co. They've got the logos that you want there. They've got an incredible selection of gear, stuff you cannot find anywhere else. If you want to get the Bulldog Initiative gear, you can only get it at Maroon & Co. So check them out today. In Starkville, they are the best place to get Mississippi State gear, no question about it. Before you go to Davis-Wade Stadium this fall, go to Maroon & Co. Let's talk some college football now, some big picture stuff, but we'll get a little thought on Mississippi State from Mike Golic Jr. He hosts the Gojo and Golic podcast on DraftKings. That's a podcast he does with his dad, Mike Golic, which is, I'm sure, a lot of fun. And we'll talk to him a little bit about working with his dad and how fun that can be. So let's go to that podcast, or sorry, that interview now with Mike Golic Jr. Let's talk a little college football. We've been off this track a little bit. We've been so hyper-focused on Mississippi State lately. I want to get back out on a little bit more of a national side of things. Mike Golic Jr. joins us, hosts the Gojo and Golic podcast with his dad. What's it like working with your dad, by the way?
You know what? It's one of those things. Thankfully, I've gotten to do it for so long right now that it almost feels second nature. And I think it's a lot like anyone else's relationship with their parents. It's awesome most of the time. And then we also know each other so well that every once in a while, like, we'll notice the thing that we've noticed since I was a teenager, and that'll get us sidetracked a little bit. We know how to kind of nitpick each other and play ways that can be entertaining. So it's so overwhelmingly the cool part of it. And I think leaving ESPN and kind of getting an appreciation of not knowing if we were ever going to have that chance again after we got done with Golic and Wingo there, to get a chance to do it here and kind of hold the pen again together has been a pretty cool experience. But trying to explain technology to a 61-year-old man who has no earthly interest in learning how to use it is my daily struggle.
Mike, I just went to the cable company to drop off a check for my mom to pay her cable bill, and I'm just am I doing? Like, what, Mom, we have this thing now. You don't have to do this, but yeah, never mind. I'm with you. I'm with you on that. All right. We talked earlier on the podcast this week about time frames for new coaches. Sure. And, you know, in this day and age of college football, when you can flip your roster so quickly, you know, it used to be you hired a new coach, and then when his guys were juniors and seniors, that's when you really would judge him. I don't feel like it's that way anymore. In your mind, how long does a new coach get at a program to start reaching whatever the program's expectations are?
Well, I think that last part you mentioned is probably the biggest part. Are what are the expectations? Like, you can look this year at the highest level. Kalen DeBoer is taking over one of the most difficult but also storied, well-funded, supported jobs in college football at Alabama, where they're not used to losing. The stat I saw the other day of their coaches poll ranking at number 5 being their lowest since 2009 was a mind-blowing reminder of just what they've been. And so I truly don't know, like, if they were to go on the road and lose at Wisconsin this year and drop 3 games overall on their season, he's probably walking into year 2 on the hot seat based on what can happen to these programs. So I think programs like that, some of the higher level ones, it might be different than other places where it's, all right, hey, I don't know exactly what the school's NIL budget looks like. I don't know how positioned they are to play in these ways. And if you're not a school that's going to be able to go out there and try and money whip people to oblivion, you know, see on the other side at Ole Miss, the way they've gone about their business using that and using the transfer portal, then I do think you still got to give guys 3, maybe even 4 years to try and set a foundation and sort of counterculture what's been the modern program build for college football.
So with that being said, 3 huge college football programs this year are in year 3 with their coach. And you know, there's some connection here, obviously. Notre Dame, LSU, and then USC, who Notre Dame plays every year, all year 3 of their head coach. What's their baseline expectation for this season going to be? If all 3 of those schools aren't in the college football playoff, are their coaches in trouble?
Yeah, I think that's realistic. I think you at least start asking questions in all 3 cases, right? Because if you're Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame, it's been the steady build of recruiting for the last 3 years. You've portaled quarterbacks each of the last 2 years. You're trying to play the game. You overhauled your wide receiver corps here. You brought in a big-time offensive coordinator in Mike Denbrock from LSU. And so you've got to now, I think, take that next step. They were under Brian Kelly at the end of his tenure, a team that made the 14 playoff a couple of times. And so I think that's the baseline where Notre Dame fans can feel good about the continued trajectory of the program, provided they're in the playoff. And I think with their schedule this year, they're positioned to probably win a game in the expanded playoff now, which is going to be another interesting way. Like, do we use that as a measuring stick more so than, hey, you made it with 12 teams. Congrats. That would have had us in, you know, the Peach Bowl before this. Now we need you to actually win a game there. Brian Kelly, kind of similar, like, hey, LSU's a different breed of animal in terms of program. Like, we talked about the big-time expectations. When your last three head coaches have won a national championship, and when you're Brian Kelly, who left Notre Dame pretty much admittedly so that, hey, this is the last thing you really need on your resume for a guy that's been a great coach at a bunch of different levels, left Notre Dame beating Newt Rockne's win total before the vacated wins thing started. Getting that national title under his belt is what he came to LSU to do. And so that's the standard when you're at a place like that. And then obviously Lincoln, he's had Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks that he can basically pull out of the couch cushions like pocket change at this point. And so seeing, hey, now that they've seriously decided to start addressing the defensive issues that have plagued him for a while on that side of the ball, can they take the step forward? I would say he's probably got the most leeway. And I would say of the three, just again, because of the program we talked about, their expectation, Brian Kelly's in the most interesting situation to me. You just had the Heisman Trophy winner last year. You got draft picks left and right still, but you're at a place where the expectation is national championship based on the talent on your roster.
Is there still a place in college football for a quote developmental program? I know people are going to point to Clemson for this one, you know, that where they're not using the portal at all. I think when I say developmental program now, I mean a program that still, they go to the portal, but it's when they really need have a hole to fill. They need a starter right away. They're not looking to bring in 15, 16, 17 guys from the portal each and every year. They still want to build through high school and try to keep those guys on campus. Does that thing still exist in college football?
Yeah, I think so. I think, quite honestly, most of the best programs in college football are kind of living like that, where the players they bring in the portal, I say they're garnishes because they're not the bulk of the meal. They can be expensive and incredible garnishes, right? Like, you look at Caleb Downs going to Ohio State. That's not a small thing by any stretch of the imagination, but the bulk of the roster, and the reason we talk about them so excitedly, is the guys they've got coming up the recruiting pipeline, the guys they got to come back that were on the team last year and forsake the NFL. Georgia's been the same way. Alabama was that way for the bulk of the end of the Saban tenure. Even Steve Sarkisian, who, you know, had to portal a bunch of receivers this last year and has picked and choose there, certainly. It's about what they've done as far as the depth of recruiting along the offensive and defensive lines there. You could look at a program like Utah out west that's getting ready to join the Big 12. Like, I think that's how Kyle Whittingham's gotten down. It's been a development program that wants to work along the lines of scrimmage still. So, yeah, I think those programs are there, but you can't just be any one thing. And I think that's the difficulty for Clemson right now, is they're still going to be a very good football team. They were the face of the college football playoffs first decade, so it's a bit of a step back from that. But you can still do that. I just think you've got to kind of mix and match both to use the tools that you've got at your disposal.
You know better than most that the offensive line is where development is the most key. It's really difficult to just bring in offensive linemen year after year. You've got to have those guys in your program for a bit, you would think. So I'll put a question into your wheelhouse. Who's the best offensive lineman in college football this year?
Ooh, it's... So in my mind, it's like a flavor of ice cream choice as I'm getting ready and going to look at some of these guys.
Cookie dough is what I would go with.
Yeah, you know, listen, that's not a bad one either. I'm all good options here. I'm the son of a type 2 diabetic that's the son of a type 2 diabetic, so you're speaking my language.
But I hear you.
I would say Will Campbell at LSU, their left tackle, or Kelvin Banks. They're two very different players, both incredibly effective. I'm probably a little bit partial to Kelvin Banks just because, you know, yeah, he's still an incredibly young player, but going into his third almost full year as a starter, he got there immediately and was an impact guy for them. And just athletically, the things that you watch that guy put on tape week in and week out, there's just only a handful of human beings on earth that can do the kind of things that he can do movement-wise, matching the skill of some of these dynamic edge rushers on the perimeter, what he does when he gets out in space in the screen game that Sark likes to use. And just I feel like with that, knowing his youth and then the development ceiling that I think is still there, he's a guy that's really exciting to look at, both at this level on a line where – listen, Texas returned four of the five starters from a group that was part of the strength of that team last year, and he's the best one on that group. So I think those two guys right near the top, if you told me either of them was OT1 come this spring, I wouldn't be surprised. But of the group I've seen so far, those two are studs.
When I think about the SEC this year, and if somebody were to ask me how many teams can win the SEC, I mean, I think the number is like six. I think there really are. This is the deepest the SEC's been in a long, long time. What about the Big Ten? How many teams can realistically win that conference?
Oof. The Big Ten at this point, I would say there's that upper crust of four that I would probably truly trust in the Big Ten right now between – obviously, Ohio State and Oregon at the top to me are fascinating. Like, there's part of me that wants to pick Oregon to win the Big Ten this year. Just looking at Dillon Gabriel and who he profiles as a quarterback, them bringing back the bulk of a line that I trust more than Ohio State's, the offensive weapons there, Dan Lanning's defensive pedigree and depth of recruiting. Like, I think they're truly capable of it. Michigan, I know they lost a ton of talent. I know they've got the sign stealing stuff hanging overhead for them, but I like Sharon Moore as a head coach. We'll see if he's, you know, if they get the NCAA violations in time to actually have him suspended for any of the season, if that's on the table. I don't know, and I don't think it'll actually affect this year. So they've been good about restocking the coffers there, even when they've given up a bunch of NFL talent in the past. And so I think they could still be froggy there. And then, listen, I know we do this every year with Penn State, but yeah. The talent on this roster that's there in the backfield already, Drew Aller, what people want out of him as quarterback, what they've done defensively. Andy Kotelnicki coming over as the offensive coordinator from Kansas is one of the most interesting hires in college football for me, just because if you didn't tune into a Jayhawk game at all last year since Andy was there under Lance Leipold, it's a laser light show. There is constant movement. There is so much done to help in a way that a lot of people looked at and didn't think was necessarily there for a Penn State offense that seemed allergic to taking chances down the field last year. And so I just wonder if you combine all of that ability with an offense that's going to structurally put defenses in a more compromised position, if this could be a chance for them to, you know, get over the hump now that the playoffs have expanded. I don't think they're better than Oregon or Ohio State by any means, but they're talented enough. And with that coaching change mixed in there under James Franklin, I do think they're an interesting team.
Let's finish it up with a talk about Mississippi State and Jeff Lebby. Everywhere this guy has been offensive coordinator, Central Florida, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, he's been consistently good. And when I'm not just good, but in some cases elite. He turned Ole Miss from a team that they couldn't score before he got there to one of the best offenses in the country. Every year he has a great quarterback. Every year a receiver comes out of nowhere to catch 60, 70 passes for 1,000 yards. What is it about this particular style of offense? I guess the generic label is veer and shoot. What makes it so consistently good?
Yeah, I think pace and space. Like, I know it's sort of reductive and we hear this all over, but you know, you look at the heightened forms of this offense. I think the purest, most uncut version of it lives in Tennessee right now, where you've got these guys so spread out for that. But it's just really hard to defend when the offense has speed and pace as a tool. And I remember when Brian Kelly first came to Notre Dame, it was one of the hardest training camps we had ever been through, because originally he wanted to be a pace team. And you don't realize going through camp while you're sweating it out and dying out there each and every day until you get to that first game and you look across the sideline and the other team's hands on hips and you're sitting there going, oh, wait a minute, that's why we did all this, where you recognize just the advantage it has right now. So I think that's certainly a part of it. And then being able to connect with the quarterback, I think, is always a good place to start with this. And you've seen the work that he's done with quarterbacks at all the stops that you mentioned there, being able to simplify the equation for the quarterback and allow them to make quick decisions, allow them to make decisions that put defenses in a bind. I think all that stuff collectively, when you can simplify the formula for your quarterback but complicate it for the defenses, then you've got a winning recipe usually.
That's interesting to hear you talk about those practices at Notre Dame, because we talked to Lebby yesterday, and he sounded not frustrated, but you know, he was talking about needing to clean up pre-snap and you know, try to get things a little cleaner. And I just thought, I wonder if they're having trouble with the speed that he wants to play at. And I mean, just from what he's saying there, does that sound like what he's saying?
Yeah, I mean, that's, and anywhere that you've had people that want to use up-tempo offense in whatever form that is, right? I mean, there's so many variations of it, calling it like a hurry up or up. It's there's so many different versions of that now, just the same way that there were so many versions of the Mike Leach air raid tree. But I think the one thing you always hear from places where they're implementing that is there's so much that has to happen from the time the ref blows the whistle after the play to the next play for you to be able to get that information in fast enough to be able to go process, read whatever the defense is showing you quickly. Like, I hated it as an offensive lineman because I like the clear picture. We were going to figure out, hey, especially where was the double team on the line? How are we going to combo? Where are the linebackers at? And sometimes when you're going fast, you have to learn how to work with a muddy picture up front in a way that to me was counter to what I had always been comfortable with at the position. So that's one example on the micro of what everyone, and listen, just in general for these guys, some of them are on their third offense in a, you know, a matter of years. Like I had four offensive line coaches in 5 years when I was at Notre Dame, and trying to implement each new coach's technique while also doing the things that make you successful as a player that you've picked up from each of the last ones, it's difficult for the players. It's difficult for the coaches because for some of the guys on this team, for Jeff Lebby, you're not going to coach veterans that are expected to be your bell cows the same way you're going to coach a guy that's coming in young and green that you have a chance to really put your fingerprints on. Some guys you're just polishing. And so going about that, yeah, there's always going to be, especially at the beginning, some rough days in that process there, but it's just about weathering the storm and keeping guys' heads up long enough to believe in what you're coaching them to where they get to see reps that all of a sudden reinforce that.
Really good stuff, Mike. Really appreciate your time. Mike Golic Jr., check out the Gojo and Golic podcast. If you don't, you're missing out. It's a great podcast. Thanks for your time, man. Appreciate you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, thanks to Mike. Really appreciate his time. Really thought he gave some in-depth answers there at the end about new systems and new coaches and how players have to react to that. So I thought that was some in-depth stuff. I really appreciate his time. We'll definitely have to get some more interviews like that in the future. That sets a high standard for next week, whoever I'm going to get. So we'll see. All right, guys, have a great weekend. Robbie and I'll be back with you on Sunday to tell you what happened at Mississippi State's first scrimmage of preseason camp. Plus, we'll probably have some more stuff to talk about as well. Have a good one, guys. Talk to you again soon. For Robbie Falk, I'm Brian Haydad. Thanks for listening to Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Mississippi Media Production.